Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. I had the chance to talk with Scottish violinist Nicola Benedetti about the violin concerto Wynton Marsalis wrote for her. She was talking to me from the Chautauqua Institute in New York State. Hi, Nicola. This is Susan Lewis from WRTI in Philadelphia. And I'm so happy to talk to you. I listened to you play this with the Philadelphia Orchestra when you were in town, and I talked to Christy Macellaru about it, and it's a beautiful CD now.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And, I'm glad you think so.
And you're at Chautauqua, which is also exciting. You workshopped the piece at Chautauqua, didn't you?
Yes, we did.
So what's it like to be back there?
It's lovely. I can actually appreciate where I am this time as opposed to last time, where I was just being handed notes left, right, and center. And I remember spending most of the time in the basement of the house that I was staying in, just practicing. It was amazing walking the same streets and thinking I did not take any of this in because I was just buried in notes.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah, I spent a week there a couple of years ago. It's an amazing place. So how did you come to work together with Wynton Marsalis? I understand you met him at 17 at Lincoln Center.
Yes, I've known him a long time, and we've always just had a kind of kinship and kind of natural understanding, I think. And I would always send him recordings of my performances. He always kept up with everything I was doing, was always aware of the education work that I was doing. And he has served as, you know, one of the greatest inspirations to me. You know, I'm often asked about inspirations with regards to musicianship and violinistically, but I've always kind of looked to the all-round person. And I think Wynton has just always been one of those figures that I've just admired so deeply and been so fascinated by his philosophies and his views and his output of music. So I went to a performance of his Swing Symphony with London Symphony Orchestra and Simon Rattle. This was maybe 6 years ago. And the feeling that was in the concert hall when they finished was so unusual. It's so uplifting, that symphony, and it's so kind of vivacious, and it's explosive, but at the same time, so complex. And I just noticed that there was a gleefulness in people without the experience being one that is escapism or distraction. You know, like people get that from a lot of pop concerts where they're just kind of euphoric and they're so happy and they've all been singing together. It was nothing like that. Right. But at the same time, it was so uplifting. And I was there with several, you know, other musicians and colleagues, and all of us were like just determined there and then, if we can possibly get Wynton to write a violin concerto, then that's what we're going to do. So I just started asking, basically, and I just kept asking for, I think, about 2 years before we finally got written on a piece of paper or in an email. I agree for the management companies involved to pursue commissioning orchestras for this violin concerto, and I will write a violin concerto because all of us know Wynton to be someone that likes to say yes to lots of things, and he wants to do so many things, but the demands on his time are so phenomenal that a lot of it just cannot possibly materialize. So once we had that in writing, we all kind of set about seeing which orchestras would be happy to do it, and we eventually came up with an amazing group of five commissioning orchestras, and the rest is
wow.
What it is.
And the idea behind the concerto, it seems like a very personal concerto. The materials say it was inspired by your life as a traveling performer, and four different movements reflect different aspects of your dream. What does that mean? What is your dream?
Oh, I don't even know. I mean, this is his interpretation of me, so he knows better than me. But no, I think that particularly pertains to the first movement. I think he sees the role of the soloist or the violinist, of that figure at the front of the stage, as the role of a bard taking you through every type of event and every type of expression, color, idea that you can find through your instrument and find through that space. I mean, the piece is so phenomenally colorful and so diverse, but at the same time so interconnected, that I feel like all of his major projects are deeply personal. If you look at, I don't know, interviews or texts or anything surrounding any of his kind of large scale works, it's always a similar story. A particular musician that he's gotten to know over years, they've kind of studied each other's music, they've conversed about all kinds of things in life and philosophy and styles and music from all over the world, and it's resulted in a piece. But actually, at the core of it is a relationship between two people. And I would say that is definitely true for this concerto.
So were you working with him as he composed it?
I was sent everything as and when it was done. So I was sent photographs of handwritten, I mean, he writes everything by hand. So I was sent a lot of photographs that I had to then print off and then colour in because I couldn't see properly. And I was sent a lot of, you know, just printed solo lines as they were being written. I never wrote a single note of the piece. Nobody did but Winton. But I gave a lot of extensive feedback. I think one of the first things that I did say to him was, after receiving about half of the first movement, was that I'm used to looking at pieces that I can't sight read well. So I wanted his concerto to be of a similar challenge and of a similar difficulty. So
that you cannot sight read well.
That I cannot sight read, yeah. Something that I look at and think, am I ever actually going to be able to play this? Because that's how I feel when I open the music, when I have opened the music of Tchaikovsky, Brahms, Shostakovich, Bartok, all of those composers. I opened those concertos for the first time and thought, I'll never be able to do this. And then it's through a process of endless hours and consistency that you arrive at something you didn't know was possible.
Right.
So I wanted the process with his concerto to be similar. And he definitely delivered on that.
Well, there's so many ways to think about this as a listener. And the integration of musical styles and rhythms and moods is so engaging. How do you think of it when you play it?
Yeah, I know. I think the violin leads the settings almost always. There are a few times when the orchestra interrupts my mood. The first time you hear the martial material in the first movement, the first time you hear that kind of nightmare with the sirens and the chaos that's coming from all corners of the orchestra, that comes from them. The violin cannot possibly compete with trombones, four percussionists, horns, trumpets, you know. But I think that's one of the totally unique and genius things about the concerto is the extensive use of such colourful orchestration. And that's something that musicians from orchestras all over the world that I've played it with, they continually comment on how masterful that is. And I know it's actually the thing that he was most concerned about to begin with was orchestration, because his, you know, his mainstay is, of course, to write for jazz bands. So it's not something he's doing every day. But for someone who was so concerned about that aspect, I think the orchestration is so absolutely phenomenal. If I'm to be as open and honest with you as I can be, I think the thing that I consider most when I'm playing the piece is him and his life, because he is such an unusual combination of interests and of circumstances and of experiences. You know, to have somebody who in their very young years, in their teenage years, was studying Bartok, Bach, Haydn, Duke Ellington, Coltrane, playing in funk bands, also, you know, studying the blues, going to his father's jazz performances. It's such an unusual convergence of styles and of interests, and then for him to be somebody that actually has the capacity and the will to study very seriously each one of those styles of music. I mean, that's more of a kind of technical, I guess, analysis of Winton's musical historical background. But I do just consider what he has lived through and his perceptions of the things that he's experienced in his life. And it's such a fascinating story to me. I kind of focus a lot on that. So perhaps where he was writing the piece with me in mind, I'm kind of playing the piece with him in mind.
Is it possible to describe how it's changed you working on this?
In every kind of way. I don't know if I'll ever have another experience that has been quite like this for me, you know, to have a piece that's written for me from somebody that I like and respect that much, and to have learned so much throughout the process is quite incredible.
Is there an overarching message that you think it conveys to people?
Yes, that none of these styles that we categorize are all that far apart, and they all have a commonality. Just like the closer you get down to the smallest particles of who we all are, the more similar we become. I would say that that's Winton's message, and his music can't help but give that message.
That's really great. And the fiddle dance suite for solo violin, is that a similar message?
Yeah, well, that one in particular is focused just on the blues and on Scottish traditional dances. So each one marries the two, and it's a tighter kind of vision that he has for that piece, because it's very specifically the combining of those two ideas.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.